Davin's Den is Wrecking Ball Radio.
Hello, everybody. You are listening to Davin's Den, Filling the Void. Yes, Davin's Den, the show that is better than paying for a rock band's political agenda. Yes. I'm your host, Davin Roosevelt. I'm joined by Joe Curry.
Hello.
And Pip Helix.
Hi, everybody.
On the show, we interview Bergenfield, New Jersey Detective Dave Daugherty to discuss police training and how you can keep yourself safe and let the police know you're not a threat. Let's get everybody on the same page and chill.
Yes, sounds important.
That's what we should have the cops with the perps do, Netflix and chill.
Yes.
Everybody should just Netflix and chill.
It's more like handcuffs and chill.
Well, anyway, still be good. Anyway, comics in the news featuring a Twitter war between Milo from Breitbart and Leslie Jones from the new Ghostbusters movie. And Third Eye Blind trolled the GOP at one of their gigs in Cleveland.
Oopsie.
We'll tell you all about that. But Joe and I did not attend a Third Eye Blind concert.
No.
Joe and I did not attend a political rally disguised as a concert. Joe and I went to see Guns N' Roses.
Yeah.
Yes.
First, a little parking lot scenario. Guy walking around dressed like Slash.
Oh, no.
It's 95 degrees. This isn't Comic-Con. I mean, really, with the hair and the... Like anybody thinks Slash is walking around for a burger to hang out with you and your Prius. Are you kidding me?
I don't know what comes over people. And you know what? Young people, I can kind of understand it's a little hero worship and everything. But anybody that's going to Guns N' Roses,
well,
come
no,
on.
No, no. Hold on, Pip Helix.
Young person?
I don't know how old this person was.
Mm-hmm.
Much younger demographic than what I'm used to seeing in these shows. I went on both nights. A lot of good-looking women who are young, knew the songs, were dancing. Much better than the oldies I'm usually hanging out with at these things.
Yeah,
there was things to look at in the crowd, which was nice.
Yeah.
That's nice for you guys.
It most certainly was.
Yes.
Although there was a girl walking around in the parking lot. It looked like she was walking around in an evening dress, like she was going to a Michelin star restaurant. Again, you're seeing Guns N' Roses. These guys are in their 50s. I doubt they're picking you out of the front row.
Yeah.
What's the point at me when you said that?
You're not getting front row tickets. So we did a little tailgate.
Oh, that's nice.
We had snacks.
Awesome.
We had drinks.
Uh-oh.
We had the grill. We had salads. We had the tent. We had music. You know what we did not have?
What?
Hamburgers and hot dogs.
Why was that?
Because Walt, the owner of Joker's Comedy Club, who confirmed the night before that he was going to bring the hamburgers and hot dogs, forgot.
Oh, no. No.
And you know where I met Walt to go to the show? In the parking lot of a supermarket.
No, no. So what exactly was the barbecue for?
Well, it was the tailgate.
Yes, I know, but what was it supposed to cook now that there were no hamburgers or hot dogs?
There was no cooking.
Oh,
there
was no cooking.
He called me, and they go, look, could you stop by a supermarket and pick up some burgers and some hot dogs? And I go, it's kind of tough, stuck in the middle lane of the Long Island Expressway. And I go, and I'm still on Long Island. I still have to get through the city, get into Jersey, sit through a monster line of traffic getting in. I go, if you want me to bring breakfast, I'll bring that, because that's when you're going to get it.
Yeah, would have been nice. It would have been something.
Yeah. Sorry, I came to the concert empty-handed.
You would be the last person.
Well, you and Walt.
Yeah.
At least Walt brought a tent.
Yeah.
You brought $200 worth of merchandise for yourself.
Oh, yes.
Joe's putting Guns N' Roses through college.
Yes. Well, I don't know when those guys are coming back. You know?
Neither do they.
Yeah, so why not, you know?
I got my $10 T-shirt in the parking lot.
Oh, good for
$10
you.
T-shirt.
$10.
So I feel like a winner.
Did you get that on the Saturday or the Sunday?
I got that on Saturday.
Okay.
Did you get it on the left side or the right? You know where they hide them.
Oh, no. They were actually wearing them at this point. They were like wearing them in this 95-degree heat.
Oh, you're kidding.
So it's game used.
Oh, so now he like takes it off and hands it to you?
I don't think the one I was wearing, but you always got to wash it. But I was very happy.
You make it through the wash.
Yes.
Yeah, really.
No, it did. It's good. I washed it. It's good to go. $10 Guns N' Roses shirt. Very happy with that.
Of course.
Joe did not get to see Lenny Kravitz. Joe would have gotten to see part of the act, but Joe, what were you doing?
I was ransacking the merch table. I got myself a hat, because what I'm going to do is when I set up my new music room and my new place, I'm going to have I got all these concert hats and stuff like that. I got me a nice T-shirt, and then what they had was $125 jersey, And I'm like, I can't afford to buy this thing. And I'm like, ah. And then I went, I walked away, and I go, I don't know when they're coming back. The thing looks cool. I want to wear it at my gig on Thursday with the band. So I laid out $125. I just deducted what I spend on groceries this month.
Yeah, but you don't need to eat, but you look good.
I would have regretted it if I didn't buy it.
Well, we don't want you to have regrets.
No.
You're a man with no regrets.
No, I'm a man with no regrets. That's me.
They did not have any Lenny Kravitz shirts.
Bummer. You know, I never noticed that.
Because you weren't looking for a Lenny Kravitz
gear? It wasn't
gear?
Looking. I wouldn't have noticed it either, but when the wife went on the second night, she went to get a Lenny Kravitz shirt.
Yeah.
Did not have Lenny Kravitz. I enjoy, you know, I'm not a Lenny Kravitz fan. If you like what Lenny Kravitz does.
I do.
It was very good. He had the full orchestra, the band, the horns. Very good.
But
the
where are you going to go his way?
Yeah. Well, that's the only song of his that I like.
He has a good catalog of music, and it's not like some new band he brought or some really obscure guy. Lenny Kravitz has a decent body of work.
Yeah.
You know, and I was here. I did hear the songs because I'm like right outside. It was,
as you were haggling.
As it was haggling. But there was one.
Excuse me, can I use a Groupon for this jersey?
Yeah, right. But there was one song that they were playing that I go, this is one of my favorite songs. I forgot he did this. Yeah.
Man, this is one of my favorite songs, but I got to buy this hat.
Yeah, essentially, yeah.
So who
knows where I
could
get Guns N' Roses merch? I mean, it's not like there's an internet.
But that shirt was pretty cool. Cool shirt.
All right.
It was worth every penny.
So what'd you think of that? What'd you think of the boys?
Outstanding. Outstanding. Axl sung for 3 hours straight, sounded phenomenal. Slash played, the tone and the guitars were really good. Duff always rules, did a punk song. The thing about it is I really think it was a very good blend of the classic lineup,
mm-hmm.
and the best of the current lineup that was with Axl.
Oh, wow.
Richie Ford was really interesting. Richie Ford has been their lead guitar player for years, you know, since the old lineup left. So it was nice to see him and Slash playing. A lot of people are saying, well, Steven Adler, who was the old drummer from the day, well, it would be nice if he played. He has been on the tour playing one or two tunes.
I think he was in Cincinnati.
Right. But the thing about it, if anybody's wondering, well, I don't know why he's playing, you know, not playing with him, he can't do the gig. Not against his playing. It's too Adler is shot, man. He's done too many drugs.
Well, they've all done a lot of drugs.
Yeah,
now.
But that show was nonstop for 3 hours as a drum. You know, as a drummer, it's demanding. Adler could not keep up with the pace of that.
The
gig.
Drummers wear out the fastest in bands.
Axl, well, that's why they blew up in Spinal Tap.
It's physically demanding.
Axl slimmed down, still a little, but he's still a little chubby. He slimmed down a lot, though. He's running around, and it looked like, especially on Saturday, but even on Sunday too, because. You know, back-to-back nights in 95-degree heat, you're doing a two-and-a-half, three-hour show.
Yeah.
He was running around, but I was watching Axl because they have the huge screens and everything, and he kind of has those eyes. And I've seen pictures of myself from when I'm performing, and we kind of have those eyes like when he's got this look in his eyes, and he's like, I know something's good, and I can't wait to share this with you because you guys are going to dig it. I noticed he had those eyes when he was like silent, like before he would like go into a new song. I'm like, he's feeling this tonight. He looks happy.
Wow.
He looked happy.
They all looked happy.
Well, now. I couldn't see Slash's face. It was just hair and sunglasses.
Well, I was talking to my buddy Johnny last night, and Johnny went on the Sunday show. Now, let me ask you a question. Was Slash more animated on Saturday or Sunday? Because my buddy was saying that Slash played phenomenal, but he might have been, like, really exhausted from the night before.
I mean, it seemed about the same. I mean, he did. I really noticed the duck walk.
Yeah.
I really noticed that on Sunday.
Yeah.
Well, maybe because of the seats I was in, where I didn't notice it on Saturday. No, I thought maybe Axl was a little slower.
All right.
But he was still running around.
Did you get the impression that you all were having a good time?
Yes, I especially got that on Saturday. But yes, on Sunday, the band looked happy. It looked like they were happy to be doing this.
And I like that. Yeah, and I like seeing that.
I think they realized how good they've been sounding and how good this tour has been. It's not like it's, you know, obviously it was a money grab, you know, because these guys got
how could you say such a thing?
If it was a money grab, the jersey would have been $150.
I understand that. But I think they also realized when things got rolling how good this band sounds and how
it sounded real good.
You know.
Now, could they have cut the time down? Sure, because there's a lot of instrumentals.
Mm.
I mean, because Axl was doing a wardrobe change every couple of songs.
Well, yeah, he's Cher now.
Yeah, well, he's putting on new shirts, same shirts he wore the day before.
Probably dripping wet.
They did a lot, but Slash and Duff didn't change. They did a lot of covers, but I guess that's Guns N' Roses thing.
That's the thing.
I would have liked to have heard some more of the originals. Would have liked to have heard My Michelle. I used to love her, but I had to kill her. They didn't do that. But, you know, a lot of good stuff.
They did a lot of stuff.
If you're a Guns N' Roses fan, definitely go to the show.
Nice.
Yeah.
If you, it was, I thought it was better than AC/DC when we saw them.
Oh, it was a lot better. It was a lot better.
Yeah.
A lot better.
Like when I saw AC/DC, I think I even said to you, I go, you know what? I'm glad I saw it, but I don't need to see it again.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Guns N' Roses, they come back around, mm-hmm. not on this tour.
Right.
But on another tour, if they put out, you know, put out a new album that nobody buys, because nobody buys new music. But if they put out a new album, I would go see Guns N' Roses again.
I definitely.
You even said that you were willing to see Axl DC now.
Yeah, because the thing about it is that the reviews have been very well. The videos that you've been seeing, you know, have looked really, really good. You know, for a show, if I knew, I wouldn't, if they came around with Axl, yeah. I wouldn't know. But if I had tickets to the gig,
yeah,
and Axl was singing, I would go for the sake of checking it out.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't, you know, a lot of people were not really sure about that.
They came on time?
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's different.
Yeah, it was really good. So if Guns N' Roses is coming to your town, definitely check it out. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Bergenfield Detective Dave Daugherty. Don't go anywhere. Back, you know what you're listening to. You're listening to Davinson. I shouldn't have to tell you that, people. Let's go, people. Up with the program. We welcome back to the den, Bergenfield Police Detective Dave Daugherty. How are you, Dave?
Good. Thanks for having me back, guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks for coming back and not hauling Joe away yet. You can do that after the show. So I don't know if you're aware of this, Dave, but the police have been in the news a lot lately.
Get out.
Well, now you sound like my wife.
You sound like me when I get pulled over, get in the car.
Of course you're aware, and there's been a lot of heated rhetoric. You know, what are the cops doing wrong? What are the people who are getting hurt, you know, getting shot? What are they doing wrong? And it's usually a lot of angry tones, a lot of pointing fingers saying, mm-hmm. you know, the police are doing something wrong, or if the person who was shot, well, you know, if they would just comply. Well, I don't want to do that. I don't want to point fingers. I want to educate. I want to keep the people, the citizens safe, and I want to keep you guys safe.
Yeah.
That's what I want to do, because if there's more you guys all running around, the police and citizens, there's more listeners for the show. So it's purely selfish.
Good reason.
But I want to educate people so they can know what your training is. And they can know how to make your job easier and put you guys at ease so there's no misunderstandings.
Understood.
Or at least limited misunderstandings.
Yeah.
Because there's no such thing as no. So, what's the first... If the police pull me over, what should I do to show the police that I am not a threat to you and to put you at ease?
Well, the answer to that is simple in statement, but it's not simple in practice. What mm-hmm. I mean by that is, simply put, do what the officer is asking you to do and understand what he's trying to do. Now, understand there are times when the officer's not going to have a chance to explain why he's stopping you or whatever, if it's a hot call or, you know, something like that. But take a motor vehicle stop, for an example.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, the officer will tell you, he has to tell you by law, why you're being stopped.
What but don't you guys usually ask so we can incriminate ourselves?
Do you know why?
No. Well, what do you think, officer? I got some ideas, but
it's the body of my truck, isn't it?
What I do is I just write down I was speeding on a piece of paper and say, read this out loud.
is there something I can do to put you at ease beforehand so that when you come up to the car,
absolutely.
What do I have to do before we even interact?
Okay. Well, you have to understand, first of all, you were saying before about education.
Mm-hmm.
Empathy is part of it, too. Putting yourself into the shoes of the person that you're dealing with, whether you're the person behind the wheel
mm-hmm.
or the police officer. From the police officer's perspective, he doesn't know you from Adam. Okay? It could be, you know...
Are you saying I'm not famous?
No, but I think you're...
Yes, that's so what he was saying.
A police officer may not know you personally. Is that better? So, therefore, he's approaching you for the first time. He knows nothing about you unless he's dealt with you again in the past. So, what the officer is looking for is, obviously, he wants to see how many people are in the car. He wants to see if there's any what we call furtive movements.
What's a furtive movement?
A furtive movement is when, if you're sitting in your vehicle and if you can imagine walking up behind the vehicle and you see the driver hunch over under the seat.
Okay.
That's a furtive movement.
So that puts you on radar, like I might be reaching for something.
Or hiding something.
Okay.
Now again, that does not mean I can tear your car apart just because of that.
Like, you can't search our car unless you see something or we give you permission, correct?
Well, there's a lot of ways. Yeah, those two conditions are correct.
Mm-hmm.
There's also something called probable cause and exigent circumstances. Now, if we go into that, we can give
We don't need to go into that. Okay.
Yeah.
Not tonight.
So, but that's the first thing. Understand that the officer does not know you. So what I always tell people, and I actually do some driver ed classes, and I explain to the kids, I say if a police officer stops you, the best thing to do is turn your interior light on in your vehicle, mm-hmm. if it's at night, and put your hands on the steering wheel.
Okay.
And then wait till you obviously roll down your window.
I'll also pull out my keys and put the keys on the dashboard, have my registration and insurance. Everything is on the dashboard with my hands on the wheel.
But here's the question. I thought about bringing out the insurance, the paperwork and everything, but then he might see me reaching for it because I have it in
and
the glove.
That's another question. What's your thoughts on that?
That's what I was getting at.
Here's the problem. Now, you see, I'm talking about a generic situation, generic scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
You have to remember, for every single combination of operator, vehicle operator, or just we'll call a subject or person and the officer, there's going to be a countless amount of scenarios that are going to happen like that. Like
mm-hmm.
what I'm explaining now, that's me personally, what I say, what I look for.
Mm-hmm.
And what I like people to do is just to sit there and listen to what I have to say
mm-hmm.
and to do what I ask them to do. There are other officers that may like what you're suggesting, mm-hmm. Joe, where putting the keys on the dash.
Mm-hmm.
Some other people... Other officers may feel, well, if you're putting keys on the dash, you must have done something wrong.
Oh.
So, and again, this is just hypothetical.
Because a couple of my friends are cops, and it's just showing the officer, look, I'm not going to get away. The keys are here. Here's my information. I'm setting up for you a safe situation ready to comply.
Right. So that's what I'm saying, though. With mm-hmm. every scenario, it's going to be a different result in mm-hmm. different circumstances. So basically, I guess the best answer is to just sit still and wait for the officer
mm-hmm.
and just comply with what he's asking you to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best thing.
Mm-hmm. What I was taught.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, what I was going to say is what I was taught was keep your hands on 10 and 2 and just sit there and wait for instructions. Like, so that you can see where my hands are. I'm not moving around like, oh, I better get my car out or anything. Nothing. Hands on wheel, wait for you.
Well, go ahead.
I was just going to ask you, if I don't pull over right away and I go for a little bit of a ride with you guys, have I just escalated the situation?
Yes, you have.
Yes, because now it's a chase, stupid.
Well, I don't do that. But
see, I want to show how some people might think that if I'm trying to stop a vehicle and it doesn't pull over right away, it pulls over me 2 or 3 miles
mm-hmm.
later on, that the officer has a heightened sense of awareness.
Yes, something might be up.
Which is true, as the officer should be. But he's not going to rip you out of the car, and he's still going to be
hopefully.
Yeah.
He's not going to be a bag of jelly beans when he comes up to the window either.
But me as an officer, though,
I'll give him a bag of jelly beans. Hello, officer.
Really? That's awesome.
What are you reaching for? I don't want black jelly beans.
Did you guys remember when they had those jelly bean donuts? Dunkin' Donuts made jelly bean donuts.
No.
I kid you not.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. How stereotypical of you.
I was just going to say, how cliche, but delicious.
I told him not to laugh at the black jelly bean joke, and then he goes into that.
Where was I going before?
I don't know.
No.
All right.
Wandering.
So let's say I have a legally licensed gun in the car. I have a license for it.
Okay.
What should I do? Do I tell you I have this gun? Because we saw that, we don't know everything that happened, but the man, Philando Castile in Minnesota, we hear he was telling the officer, I have a legally registered gun, and he went to reach for it, and then we saw what happened. He got shot. So what do I do? I have a legally licensed gun. It shouldn't be next to me, but I guess it could be next to me. I guess it could be under the seat. It's in the glove compartment. Do I let you know I have this gun before anything comes up?
I would say that's a good idea, but that's one of those times when I would not make any furtive movements. And obviously in New Jersey, you cannot carry a firearm in your vehicle. Even if it's licensed and it's legitimate, it has to be in the trunk and it has to be unloaded.
Mm.
And you can only take it from your residence to the range, or if it's a rifle and you're going hunting, from your residence to wherever you're hunting.
Okay.
So different states have different regulations, but yes, again, now in that case, I would wait if I were you. If, let's say if it was a state where you can carry, you can possess firearms and vehicles, then what I would do is calmly let the officer know, but keep your hands. I would make a mental note. Even if the officer says, where is it? So what's your first reaction if somebody says, hey, where is something? Like, where's your license? Sometimes you reach
for your wallet.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
or just tell the officer, look, I have a weapon with me. I'll keep my hand. You instruct me on how you want
to
proceed.
And I can clarify that a little bit more. Like, let's talk about a scenario where I'm patting somebody down. They're under arrest or they're going to be arrested. And I'll ask them if they have any weapons on them or needles or anything that's going to hurt me or stick me or poke me. A lot of times they will be honest, actually, because they know the end game is I'm going to find it.
Yeah.
And they'll say, oh, yeah, I have a needle here in my pocket. And I'll be like, no, do me a favor. So what I do now is I say, I'm going to ask you a question. And do me a favor. Please do not move your hands at all, no matter what.
Okay.
Okay. When I have time to explain that, it works. And usually,
obviously, when somebody's resisting, it doesn't go that well.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
All right. So say I'm hanging out at the corner store, minding my own business. You're looking for somebody. You don't want me hanging out there. You start asking me questions. I don't want to answer questions. I don't have to answer questions, do I?
Okay, we're going to get into legal scenarios now, which I can do this in 20 words or less, I hope.
Well, I mean, basically, this is just for people, because these are scenarios. Yeah.
An officer has the right to come up to you and talk to you for anything. However, if the officer doesn't have probable cause or reasonable suspicion that you're committing a crime or offense, you do not have to stay there.
So I can walk away.
You could say, yeah, you can do not say a word and walk away.
Somehow I don't think that would work out well, though.
But that's the law.
How do I know if there's probable cause, though? Because if there's probable cause, then you prevent me from walking
exactly.
away.
Exactly. Like, if I walked up to you and you were the suspect of a robbery.
And I don't know this.
You match the description. I would first walk up and I'd start asking general questions.
Right.
Just to kind of feel you out. If you're my suspect and you decide to walk away, then I'm going to say, hold on a second. You can't leave right now. And this is the reason why.
Okay.
So where were you? You know,
I have a feeling that it doesn't usually go that smoothly. I have a feeling, if I'm walking away, you're not explaining yourself. Like, you might, but I think like a lot of police might not. And I think that's how it escalates from something that should have been pretty benign to something that went south.
Yeah, and that goes to training.
All right. We're going to have more with Detective Dave Daugherty from the Bergenfield Police Department. Don't go anywhere. You listen to Davin's Den. We're back with Detective Dave Daugherty of the Bergenfield Police Department. We were chatting a little bit on break, and Dave saw me squirming, so I was a little nervous. So I want to know, what do you consider resisting arrest?
Not complying with my orders.
That's pretty wide, though.
Well, there's two kinds of resisting arrest, actually. There's resisting with force and passively resisting. Resisting arrest passively is if I say, hey, you're under arrest, and you refuse to give me your hands, put it behind your back.
Okay.
It's a lesser grading of the offense, but it's still an offense. Usually that becomes resisting with force. Resisting with force is a higher offense, a more severe crime. But that's basically it in a nutshell.
I think a lot of times when, let's be honest, not every police officer is the best police officer. I mean, you know, they have personal lives, they have bad days, they make mistakes. Or some of them are just bad people. Police departments are reflections of society.
Yeah.
To think that every police officer is great or every police officer is terrible is just ridiculous, because the police officers are taken from society. So sometimes police, they wrong people, or people feel wronged. But, I've been wronged by the police. I've gotten seatbelt tickets when I was wearing a seatbelt. I mean, and you know, this is just like motor vehicle stuff. So, I mean, listen, it happens. I'm not going to say why it happens, but it happens. But I feel a lot of times people don't feel that there's any real recourse, you know, if they've been wronged by the police, especially if it's local. Say it's where you work, and right. I grew up, and I live in that neighborhood, and I think I've wronged you. I think a lot of people feel, well, if I call the police department, it's just going to be worse. They're going to know about me, and I'm going to get hassled for every type of thing. What type of recourse is there?
That's a great question, actually, and I'm the perfect guy to ask, because I actually do the internal affairs investigations for the police department.
Mm.
Basically, understand this, that your first recourse of defense is your judicial system. Plead not guilty for a charge, whatever, go to court. If you have a problem with the officer beyond that, then that's going to be an internal affairs issue. Okay, and you have to know this, that first thing, we have to take every single internal affairs complaint, no matter what, whether it's by phone, whether it's anonymously, whether it's even with a juvenile sometimes. We have to take the complaint. And what I mean by that is we document that there was a complaint against an officer and it gets investigated. Now, obviously, it's easier to investigate a complaint against an officer if we have an actual complaining witness who was meeting with us face-to-face and is telling what's going on versus somebody who's anonymous. But every single complaint gets investigated no matter what.
But how do you prove? Like in my case, which is pretty benign, how do I prove, if I wanted to really take this up the ladder, that I was wearing a seatbelt? I mean, isn't there the presumption that the police officer was right and I wasn't?
Oh, well, what you're talking about with the seatbelt case,
I was just using that one.
Well, that's the judicial part of it. That you would have to argue in court and say, and you would present your witnesses.
And I think a lot of people feel, and I feel this, that the courts are more likely to agree with the police if it's your word versus mine.
Well, that's a good question. I can get into that in a second. Okay. But to go back to the seatbelt thing, the seatbelt thing by itself is judicial. Now,
right.
If you feel that you were given a seatbelt ticket because the cop has a problem with you,
right.
Or the cop has dealt with you, he just doesn't like you or whatever, that's an internal affairs issue.
Oh.
So I would say, listen, I was so even if I pay the ticket and I'm guilty, I could still go and complain afterwards.
If the cop's demeanor was improper, yes.
Okay.
If you feel that you were your civil rights were violated, yes.
Okay. I mean, I don't know too many people that are going to take it to internal affairs for something benign. But I guess if like I felt like I was roughed up, right. But again, if I felt like I was roughed up, I might not want to come to the police after that.
Right, but I think that it's really interesting, and I didn't realize that if you said, you know, you're not just talking about what you would bring to the municipal court and say, I disagree with that charge or whatever, but if you're saying this was above and beyond and I felt like my civil rights were, stepped over or something, that every single thing is taken to internal affairs. I had no idea about that. It's good to know that you have that recourse as a civilian.
And as a matter of fact, it's very strict. The Attorney General and the Prosecutor's Office, they will come down on the police department and the officers individually if they don't do a full investigation.
Well, like I was telling you off air, when I got pulled over and I disagreed with the officer that I was speeding, he said, "Are you calling me a liar?" And I got a little nervous to tell because it was very out of character.
Or what you thought the character should be.
But still,
it might be completely of character for him.
Damn it, I got a little nervous.
They've made me nervous too.
You know, I'm like, is this guy okay?
It's understandable.
When we went on Joe Cumia's show, Guilty by Association, I said on the air, I get more nervous dealing with police than I do dealing when I'm walking through a city dealing with African Americans, and you all looked at me like I was crazy. Mm. The police I've had more situations where the police messed with me and made me feel nervous than I've ever had with African Americans. And I'm a white guy, so I can just imagine.
I
can just imagine how an African American would feel, whether they've had bad encounters themselves, or they have family members, or they've seen on TV. And it doesn't make your job any easier if there's already the
tension.
Yeah, it just escalates everything.
I felt nervous one time. I was up in Maine. It was when I was in my 20s. I had hair past my shoulders. I had a beard. And we went to this fair, and there was an officer there.
Did he have scissors?
No. But he was staring at me and would not stop. And I wanted to go up and ask, is there a problem? But I didn't want to escalate that situation. I just felt like, am I a suspect? Well, let's discuss this. But I didn't want to go up and address it.
I don't
see. Thought it might have been disrespectful.
I don't
see.
If I was that, now knowing me, Joe, if I was that cop, you know, how would you have responded to me?
Yeah, but he doesn't know you.
I know, but that's the point I'm going to try and make, though, is that it's kind of a two-way street.
Yeah.
You know, so that whereas you feel intimidated. And also, let's not forget that obviously, you know, the badge and the uniform and all that is also intimidating, too. So
don't forget the gun.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah, that.
Oh, that thing.
I'm not worried about getting scratched on your on your non-soft uniform.
And the cuffs, too.
Yeah. No. The gun. The gun, the taser, the nightstick.
No, wait. Can we talk more about the handcuffs?
Which one? I have two sets.
Oh, hey there.
Show off.
We'll talk later.
The metal ones and the fluffy ones. The fluffy ones.
The fluffy ones. I was like,
he pulls out the wrong ones. You mean hold away and pink fuzzy
cut. Oh, hell, these are for home. Oh, Jerry,
I don't know where he's taking me.
They were in the drawer. I took the wrong one.
No, officer, I don't want to go in the back of your car.
Wait.
Can I have somebody else arrest me, please?
Yeah. Is this going to get me out of a ticket? I need to know.
I volunteer as tribute.
But it was an awkward situation, you know, and I was doing nothing wrong, but it was awkward, you know?
Right. And there's no easy answer for what we're all asking ourselves here. You know, there really isn't. But it's totality of circumstances. But here's the rule that I go by.
Okay.
The rule that I go by, my father actually taught me. Treat people how they treat you. But I actually take it a step further. Mm. I usually treat people plus one better than they treat me. Mm. Now, granted, when the situation goes south, then all bets are off and I do what I got to do to go home at the end of the day. And it took me a long time to learn that plus one coming up as a cop. Mm. When I was new, you know, I got to be honest. I was 21. That was like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
I was new, and you know, I was proud, and I had a sense of not. It's hard to describe. I had a sense of mission and purpose.
Mm-hmm. Johnny Law.
Yeah, that's me.
Yeah, I know your difference.
I'm Batman.
Sure you are.
Is that what the cape is about?
But I think you bring up a good point. I think the younger police, for the most part, obviously there's an exception, seem to have, they're not as polished, they haven't seen as much, they have that sense of purpose, and they seem to have more of an edge, more of a chip on their shoulder than somebody who's
there
been.
There are definitely cops that are like that, I'll be the first to tell you. But now here, the solution to that is training and, more importantly, experience.
Yeah, like I agree.
With me, it was never even a training issue. Mm. Police community relations was not even a training issue in the academy 23 years ago, mm. for me, right. anyway.
Yeah, but you're a pretty chill guy.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. But I got to be honest. I was not always chilled. I was always like on edge, like, you know, on these motor vehicle stops we're talking about. And that's actually a good thing because you want to go home at the end of the day. So being on edge.
No, you have that heightened sense.
Yeah. As long as you don't take it out, you know, past that level of
right,
legality.
Right.
You know, so. But with me, you know, like now what I do is when I go on calls, well, actually, because I'm an administrator, I hardly go on calls anymore. So when I used to go on calls.
Stop gloating.
they don't like, they get teased for that, being the desk jockeys.
When I used to go on calls, though, whenever I could, I would explain what's going on to the person I'm dealing with, mm. you know? And again, that's the empathy again. Here's like your scenario. You're getting stopped or you don't know what's going on. The first thing I'll do is I'll tell you as soon as I can what the situation is.
Right.
That's good. I think I know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask you so it could be on record. Police, are you guys taught shoot to kill?
No, we're not taught shoot to kill. We're actually taught shoot to neutralize.
What does that mean?
Basically, that means we will shoot in staring down a, you know, danger. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's
right.
Deadly force, if you will. We are taught to shoot until that threat against us or somebody else is neutralized. Mm. Now, if I shoot you in the leg, you know, then you go down, then the threat is neutralized. But you have to think about this, though. We are trained to shoot for center mass. Reason being is because...
That'll neutralize it.
Well,
now, bigger target.
Think about this, though. It is the center target. But more importantly, we as cops, we have to be not only concerned about what's going on right around us, mm-hmm. but that bullet is going to travel at 1,500 feet per second mm-hmm. for, you know, a good distance. If I miss you, because I'm shooting for your leg and I'm just trying to wound you, and I shoot somebody else mm-hmm. a half a mile down the road, that's not good.
I think we saw that in Miami. I don't think it was a half a mile down the road. It was the guy next to him with his hands up.
Everybody thinks that. It's like, why don't you just shoot him in the hand if he's holding a gun?
You
got
to see something like
a
that.
A moving target?
You got to see stuff like that. Where you have an autistic man and an African-American man trying to talk everybody through with his hands up. And the African-American man, you got to see to go, this is not making my job any easier. I mean, that has to be really difficult for the good police to have to, you know, turn on the TV and say, see, such a gross mistake.
Well, let's talk about scenarios like that in general instead of just that one in particular. Because mm-hmm. the jury is still not out, no pun intended. I mean, I only saw half the video. So
we saw the autistic man, and then we saw the chief of the PBA, head of the PBA, go, well, he wasn't aiming for the African American, he was aiming for the autistic man.
Well, let's say this:
who was holding a truck?
In the past couple of years, I'm sure that of all the scenarios that we've discussed, there was probably one, at least, where a cop made a mistake.
Right.
Okay. And yes, when cops make mistakes, it makes us all look bad.
Right.
Because of my opinion, it's because of rhetoric and media. Mm. You know.
I agree.
So I mean. I think I showed you a video a while ago. There was a video of a police officer who was killed in the line of duty in Wichita. I think it was Wichita. And right before he was killed, he was in a fast food restaurant, and he was buying cookies for a little kid.
Oh.
And they were opposite races, by the way. The officer was white. The little kid was black. And he bought him cookies. He walked outside. He got shot dead 5 minutes after that. Did you guys hear about that in the news?
No.
So, but what I'm saying is it's the solution to this situation we're talking about right now is not just education, it's also empathy.
Right.
To put yourself in the shoes of the other person, okay? Because whereas I'm talking about what happened to the cop, what happened to all those other people that were shot by officers, whereas whether they were justified or not, we won't discuss that right now, but any taking of life is not a good thing.
Well, you say the taking of life, and this is an reason that I'm hearing come up in the courts a lot more in these cases where the police are brought up on charges where somebody unfortunately dies, and the police say, you know, I feared for my life. It just seems to me that's a pretty broad thing, and it's coming up a lot more than it used to. Is there, like, a definition that you guys are taught in training of what fearing for your life means, or is that just like a gut thing that you just feel?
We would call it the reasonableness test. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
If your testimony shows that somebody else who was in your situation would feel the same way, that was reasonable what you did, that's the reasonableness test.
We've seen it where the suspect was running away from the police. Now, you shouldn't run from the police. Obviously, you shouldn't run from the police, and you know. But it's hard for me to take that leap. Well, he's running in the opposite direction. How could you be fearing for your life at that moment?
Well, in that situation, maybe he was, again, totality of circumstances. If you show me the exact scenario we're talking about, we can dissect it.
Right.
But, you know, if an officer's running from the police, maybe he has reason to believe the suspect is armed, you know. Let me tell you a quick story, actually, one time. Chasing somebody just like this who he didn't want to stop. Okay. And I'm chasing this kid. This is when I could run.
The Bergenfield PD behind desks and immobile.
But
nobody committed crime because they're quite tired and can't move.
Yeah. By the way, for the listeners, Dave seems to be in pretty good shape.
Yeah, he's,
especially compared to the three of us.
He's not like this big pudge or anything. So calm down about the donut comments. Go ahead.
So he's running away, and we're going in between houses and whatnot. And I come around. I'm coming around corners pretty quick because I'm going to get this guy. You know,
right.
that's my mindset. I'm going to get him. I'm trying to be tactical and safe at the same time. But as I'm chasing this kid, I go around the corner. Come around the corner of a house, and he's standing right there. He's standing right there, and he has something in his hand.
Oh God!
Okay. He has his hands in a somewhat up position. Okay.
Right.
And he has an object in his right hand. Okay. So. At first, I'm like, if that was a gun, I'd be dead.
Right.
You know, I'm chasing this guy. I'd be dead because I came right around the corner. It was a perfect ambush. It turns out he gave up because there was a big wall in front of him. He couldn't scale. He turned around, pulled out his wallet, and he was giving up.
Oh, God.
You know, but
you don't know that.
Right.
Why'd he pull out his wallet?
Well, this was years ago. This was even before the things that happened with, there was a case in the city with, I forget the name. Anyway,
I know that in the heat of the moment, and there could be a million different things going on, I don't understand the impulse that people have to go for things in their pockets or in their jackets or to put things in their hands that you can't quite tell what they are.
Because the empathy has to go both ways. The cop has to be empathetic of the person they're speaking to.
Right.
And the person that the cop is speaking to has to be empathetic of the cop to realize what they might be going through.
Right. Don't grab for anything.
So we recently had the Orlando tragedy,
right?
And Donald Trump's, you know, pretty much said, "Well, it would have been a lot better if there were civilians who were armed shooting back at the killer." And then we had the GOP convention where the Cleveland police said, and "It's an open carry state," but he's like, "Can you guys please not bring your guns?" And they brought their guns, which is fine. It's their right. It's their right in that state. But as a police officer, what's better for you to do your job? Is it better if there's a perp, an evil person who's trying to kill people, and you got civilians trying to shoot him? Or is it better if nobody else is shooting but the perpetrator and the police? What makes your job easier?
Wow, that's a really tough question to answer quickly.
Mm.
Truly is.
Well, I mean, I know there's different scenarios.
Yeah, yeah. Well, with the scenario in Cleveland, I'd say this. I'd say we do have the right to carry. And I think it's a great right that we have that. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, right to possess firearms. However, I would say if you're a protester, you should not be carrying a weapon because you're not a sworn law enforcement officer.
But I think these were Trump supporters.
Well, they're not sworn law enforcement.
No, they're not.
But either way, in a situation like that, I would say it's probably not a good idea. Now, there was a situation once where there was somebody an active shooter scenario,
mm-hmm.
and somebody, a private citizen, stepped in and stopped it. In that case, it was good.
It happens.
But
I
would have to assume, though, mm-hmm. in that case, in that state, the carry laws were strict, and the guy went through a good background check.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because
if you say put yourself in the Pulse situation, you know, with what happened in Orlando, do you want? I mean, you guys get in there, you get called. You know, there's an active shooter situation. You have civilians now. We'll put them firing back, and now you guys walk into this. Does it make it more dangerous for you because you don't know who's on your side? And
yes,
okay.
Yeah, of course. Because now the first responding officers get their reporter shots fired, and they get a good law abiding citizen who's trying to defend other people and trying to shoot the bad guy. We'll call him,
mm-hmm.
and then the cop pulls up. He doesn't know him from Adam.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And he's. Got it. You know, it's a situation.
There was a situation that occurred on Long Island where there was a confrontation, and there was I think it was a city cop, and he was a detective, but he came up and he got his car and he got his shotgun, and he walked up, and then somebody said gun, and the shot and killed him. He was a law officer. Other law officers shot him, but it was one of those scenarios where it was a very unfortunate thing. But it's that scenario
that happened.
They did not. He was, you know, the Nassau. He was city. He was trying to assist, but he had a shotgun. They don't know. They didn't know who he was.
That's a very good point. And actually, it happens a lot more than you think.
Mm.
There's something called the UCR, which is the Uniform Crime Reporting,
mm-hmm.
which is a federal. It's a book that's published every year that shows offenses throughout the country. And one mm-hmm. of them is, you know, law enforcement deaths. It has all kinds of statistics mm-hmm. in it. And one of the things it shows is friendly fire deaths in law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, you can actually Google that, where you can just download the stats mm-hmm. on your computer if you want to take a look at it.
All right. Well, we got two more, and then we're going to have to let you go. We know you have things to do. You're a busy man. How important is it for members of a police force to live in the community where they patrol?
Ah, that's an awesome question.
Okay. That's why I asked them, sir.
So
he leaves the crappy questions to me.
Yes. This is a bunch of crap, Pip.
I will explain my scenario coming up through the ranks and getting hired, and then you can answer your own question based on my response.
Okay.
So when I lived in Bergenfield, to be a police officer in Bergenfield, I had to live in Bergenfield at that time to be a police officer, to take the test, to go through the academy, and you had to live in Bergenfield as you were currently employed.
Oh.
So in my scenario, well, actually, if I can just fast forward, that's actually changed now, where you can basically take a test anywhere throughout the state.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, being from Bergenfield, I know people. I know the streets. I know the problems. I know the problem people. Right. I know the people that can be helped.
And they know you because they see you are in the community.
Exactly. That is the crux of what's called community policing.
Mm-hmm.
There's the perfect interaction between the public and the police. They're partners. Mm-hmm. They really are. But then, and again, nothing wrong against officers coming from other places in the state, coming to Bergenfield as an example. They do good jobs too.
Right.
But they don't have the same time, emotion, and heart invested into my community as they do.
Mm.
They still try and do the best job that they can, and they do great jobs. Okay. But me from living in town, and actually it's a funny story about how you and I met, you know? It's just...
No, it doesn't end the way you think it did, Joe.
How fast were you going?
I have a radar detector. I know Detective Dave does not think it helps, but it does.
So I'm all about affording opportunities to people who wouldn't have the same opportunity in their own community to have them go to a different community. That's great. But I do believe that having that partnership is key. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, no, it's kind of what I thought. I think it's very important that you heard the Dallas police chief say it after the Dallas thing, you know, hey, instead of protesting, there's jobs open. So join the police force and we'll put you in your community.
Mm. Yeah. Right.
You know, I think that's very important. I don't think we have enough of it.
Yeah.
I think it de-escalates everything. If there's a familiarity, hey, I saw you at the diner.
It goes outside of work too. As a matter of fact, in Bergenfield, a lot of our guys, they're coaches for youth sports. Some of them are actually in Bergenfield because the cops live in Bergenfield or whatever. But again, that's another outlet or an avenue of communication between the public and the police.
Right.
Just coaching these kids, they get to know them.
Last question, Dave.
Mm-hmm. All right,
we're hearing this a lot now that the police are saying they don't feel supported. They don't feel supported by the community. Some say they don't feel supported by the president. And I always say, well, I don't need the president. This is just an aside. I don't need the president to tell me I'm doing a good job or not. I don't care what the president says. But I would care if the community where I was patrolling, if I felt like I wasn't supported. Do you and your brothers and sisters in law enforcement, the Bergenfield police, do you guys feel supported?
Well, that question I will only answer for myself.
Okay.
Okay. And... It's hard to describe accurately how I feel. When it comes to my own community, I do believe that the majority of my community has our back as police officers. I would go on to say, though, that I feel if I could go back 23 years ago, and I've always wanted to be a cop, if I could go back 23 years ago, I'd be working at IBM right now.
Wow.
Just because a lot of time you
I hear I didn't mean to interrupt. I'm sorry.
I'm just asking because it's like such a stressful job. I mean, I know it's not. I don't think it's the money with you. I don't think that's what it is.
I have sacrificed a lot, and I feel that me personally, I feel I hate to use such a strong word. I feel vilified because of media. However, please know this, and I'll say this to all of your listeners too. No matter how I feel, I promise you, no matter what happens, I'm still going to run to help you, no matter what, no matter how I feel. And I'll run there as fast as I can.
And there's no better way to end a segment than with that. You're listening to Davin's End. Dave, thank you for coming
My
in.
Pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Support your local police. Thank them when you see them. Don't go anywhere. More show. Back, listening to Davin's Den. Thank you guys for hanging out with us. That was a great job by Dave of the Bergenfield PD. Let's keep this show moving to a little comics in the news.
And now it's time for Comics in the News.
Let's try that again.
All right.
Shoot. Let's do comics in the news again. This is just a... All right. Hold on. All right. We're back. Listen to Davin's. Then we're going to do a little comics in the news as I pull it up. Just bear with me.
Oopsie.
Yeah, it's just been that type of
I think we need a sounder that says, oopsie.
All right, here's comics in the news.
And now it's time for comics in the news.
All right, so Milo Yiannopoulos got in a Twitter war with Leslie Jones, and he apparently had some of his followers go after her. Milo is the conservative writer for Breitbart magazine. He's been banned before for abusing Twitter's terms and conditions.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the big problems with Twitter is you can get trolled by people.
Right.
It's with all social media, honestly, and you don't know who these people are. They really went at Leslie Jones with a lot of sexist and racist comments, really derogatory stuff. I'm not gonna mention what it was. So Leslie Jones signed off of Twitter. She's
right.
Like, you know what? I got to go. Peace out. It's really upset. All because I did a movie. Then Twitter banned Milo because I think Twitter is trying to make the stand. Like, you know, we do have terms and services, and you need to appreciate it. And Milo said, he said, some people are going to find this perfectly acceptable, but anyone who believes in free speech or is a conservative certainly will not. He said, and he thinks that this is going to be the end for Twitter. So his beef is with Twitter for kicking them off of his platform.
Right.
Their platform, not his platform. A platform which he agreed to the terms and services to get on.
Yeah, which you have to be able to use it.
Here's a mile. It's not about free speech, though.
No.
Because free speech is protected by the government. The government is not going after Milo. This is Twitter. This is a privately owned company that have their own terms and services, which you agree to use it
mm-hmm.
for free. So I feel they're perfectly within their rights.
Absolutely. If they have their terms and services, it's not a free speech issue. It's exactly what you said. It's a platform where he's expressing his views. If the platform feels that those views are not within their terms and conditions, then he either has to stop doing that. If he continues, then they have every right to cut off his account.
So we all agree on this.
Absolutely.
See, even if it was a freedom of speech issue, just because you're allowed to say anything you want doesn't mean that you don't have to live with the consequences for what you said.
Well, we've talked about that before.
Yeah.
But again, this isn't freedom of speech. It has nothing to do with the government.
No.
This is a private company.
Right. Yeah. Right.
And it's not something that's costing him his job or anything like that.
Which it should.
But still, that's another
right.
argument for another day.
Right.
However, within the terms of services on a platform, a private platform from a company, if you're not abiding by that, then they have every right to kick you off. It's not a free speech issue.
So we all agree that we have no issues with platforms like Twitter and Facebook putting on specific guidelines if we're using their platform.
No, of course not.
Yeah. It's like say you walked into your house and I was using rough language in front of your daughter. Dude, stop that. Hey, I could say what I want. No, you're in my house.
Yeah.
You either.
And you signed the terms and conditions at the door.
But it's a reasonable expectation.
Is that what that small print was by your door?
Yes,
by the key fob. But
I didn't check the box.
You know, these are
out.
Yeah.
With your box.
Platform rules, house rules. You know, he's totally in the wrong to say it's a free speech. It's not a free speech issue.
No.
Milo has argued that this is a left issue, that this is PC, this is fascism. That's what Milo has argued. Now I know Joe, I know you're totally against the PC. I'm not a big fan of PC.
But it's on their platform with their rules.
I would argue that he is completely wrong, that this is a capitalism issue. Because Twitter makes money through advertising.
Yeah.
Advertisers sponsor Twitter so they can reach consumers. It's very reasonable to make the calculation that losing a star like Leslie Jones, who's a regular cast member on Saturday Night Live
right.
and is in this Ghostbusters movie, is going to hurt the bottom line more than losing a blogger on a conservative internet website.
It could be, but if you have somebody with that, if you have people, see, the problem is when you have celebrities on there, As Anthony Cumia would say, in the old days, you would write Clark Gable a letter telling him that he stunk and gone with the wind. It would have to write a letter. Really, you know, and you'd have to write a letter, and it would have to go to the publicist, and the publicist might hand it to Gable, and Gable may read it. Who knows? It's a long shot.
Right.
Instantaneously, if somebody makes a movie, so you can go right on, you can post it, and they chances are they will see it. So it's, you know, it's a way now that you really, you know, platforms have to be careful and police what is being said.
Well, to continue with my capitalism thing, I think it's very reasonable to assume that sponsors don't want to be associated with hate speech or misogyny. I think Twitter looks and goes, you know, I think the sponsors go, well, this is bad for business if we're associated with this. So if those companies think it's bad for business for them, then it's bad business for Twitter because then they don't want to sponsor on that platform. So I think this is purely capitalism. I don't think Twitter's a white knight. They're just looking at the bottom line.
If you're looking at like something that, I mean, all the social media has been around for a long time, but if you look at something we're all familiar with, we all have watched network television. Does everything fly on network television? Of course not, because the sponsors would have a cow. So it is more about capitalism.
All right, don't go anywhere. Listen to Davin's then. Last segment of the show. Thank you guys for hanging out with us thus far. So, Third Eye Blind, not a fan of the Republicans, as it turns out. They were performing at a fundraiser in Cleveland the week the GOP was there. The fundraiser was Musicians on Call, which is a nonprofit that brings live music to patients in healthcare facilities. Wasn't a Republican fundraiser. Just happened to be a lot of Republicans in town, as you would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
In the past, they have declined to perform at GOP fundraisers. So Stephen Jenkins is the lead singer, and he wanted to set the record straight in his mind. I just want to make, let's make this clear, he tells Rolling Stones, we're in direct opposition to everything the Republican Party stands for. And the way he made his point was by shouting, raise your hand if you believe in science. Yeah, that's similar things. The booing cream, the crowd booed. They were not pleased.
Because they hate science.
No, I don't think that's why.
They hated it in school.
I think they were probably booing because they didn't like the con.
Oops. Sorry. That was me.
Why not? And then they did not play their hit Semi-Charmed Life. They didn't play that. But they did play their radio hit from 1998, Jumper, which is about the suicide of Jenkins' gay cousin. He goes, to engage with that song means that you are participating in the belief system that all people are equal and deserving of the dignity and protection, which is not what the Republican platform is. By the way, Republican platform this year, very anti-gay. Everybody said it. They believe in Pray the Gay Away, which is just absurd.
Ugh.
They think my gay cousin should be in conversion therapy. All right, so that's what he does. So I'm torn on this. On the one hand, you go, well, they're brave to play in the belly of the beast. But on the other hand, you're not really hired to state your political views.
Yeah, I mean, it's not as, I mean, he had the gig was in town at the same time.
Yeah, but they knew what they knew. Everybody knew when the GOP convention was there, and they purposely decided not to play any hits.
That I have a big objection with. And it's and that, you know, but that's a story for another day. But you know,
no, it's not. It's all part of it because they're punishing this audience. Because you know, if you see when we went to see Guns N' Roses the other night, and they decided not to play Appetite for Destruction because you know, Governor Christie's destroying Woods, whatever. He's not, but whatever.
Yeah.
They're making a statement. You're gonna be pissed off. Paid your ticket. You want to hear the songs.
Yeah, I don't want to be preached to.
Well, but then again, but people support Bono, and you know you're going to see him preaching.
Yeah, but as long as he's playing the hits and he doesn't make it a whole...
So play the hits, but don't talk down to me.
Oh, right, exactly.
Okay. You know, I'm really torn on this. I kind of dig it. I would feel a lot better about them doing this because they were doing this for a charity.
Yeah.
If they would have returned the fee. They say, you know what? We did this tonight. Our fee, I want you to donate to the charity.
Yeah, actually, if they hadn't taken money to do this, if it was a private party and they had done this, I would have said, excellent trolling on your part. However, taking the fee from the charity, not as great.
I've done Republican fundraisers before. Joe, have you done Democrat fundraisers?
Yes.
do you alter your set? Well, you probably should.
Yes.
Oh, you do?
Yes. Well, when I do the Republican one, oh, boy. Hey, they, fire and brimstone.
Yeah, well, they carry you off like you're a hero. He's one of us, and more so than we are.
I did one in Philly a couple years ago. Yeah.
There's something going on in Philly now. Why don't you try it right now? I do not really alter my stuff for the Republican fundraisers. I'll poke at them.
Right.
I'll poke at them. But I don't really, I wouldn't just like get up there and preach to them either.
The problem with doing the fundraiser, regardless what side of the aisle the fundraiser is for, is that pretty much they're a bunch of stuffed shirts and they're there because they're kissing the butt of whoever's running in the party. And I've had fun with some, and there's some that were just a disaster because nobody wants to be there. They just go in to kiss butt. To be support this person.
Right, right. Well, a lot of, like, charity dinners, it's a lot of rich people throwing their money around, and sometimes they don't even know what the charity is. They're just there to eat a rubber chicken and hobnob.
They kind of look down at the talent
that
comes in, like, you know, with a help, which we are, but, you know, you don't make us feel that way.
Right. I mean, it should be elevated help.
So, I mean, I'm torn on this because, again, it was such an anti-gay platform this year, and it was so personal to him.
Yes, incredibly so.
So, I mean, I kind of get why he did it.
Yeah, I kind of like that they did this.
But I wouldn't do it. I would not go this route.
No.
I mean, because I've had good times at Republican fundraisers, and I bust their chops. Right. And I've had good times at Democrat fundraisers. I usually more fun at the Republican ones than the Democrat ones.
Really?
Because the Democrats can be a little too PC. They can be a little groany.
Right.
Which I don't. And the Republicans are like, yeah, we're a bunch of crazy bastards. Keep it coming.
Well, I can see that.
I don't know if I was doing. I don't know how they would react with me. You know. Really sticking it to them with the transgender thing that they're pushing with the bathrooms. Because I do have a joke about that, and I wouldn't back down on that joke.
Right.
So I don't know how they would react to that.
If this was a gig where it was, you know, obviously they were in town at the same time the convention was. If they're doing this other gig, okay, for this benefit, then they should really tone down the rhetoric because they're not there to bash Republicans. They're there to raise
But they realized the audience was Republican.
Yeah. But still, they should... They have to. They go. Look, it's a benefit. It's not like a regular gig that people came to see. You know, we were in town. They walked in. We're just doing a regular gig, and they could do that. We're doing it for a benefit. We're kind of representing an entity tonight. And maybe
interesting.
We should steer away from the rhetoric. If it was just we're playing at the local, you know, shed or whatever, and you're coming in to see us, then you know what? We're our band. This is our ideology. We're gonna.
Well, you could also say, well, if they're playing the shed, they're also representing the shed that night too, because they're hired help. You're hired. You're representing somebody. I know when I'm on stage as a comic, I feel like I'm representing the club.
But you're also representing. But if you're doing a regular night at the club and it's a regular audience, you're representing your individuality as an entertainer. If you're doing a benefit for, like, you know, cancer or something like that, you know, then you need to stay the confines with that because you're also doing. You know, they're people are there to fundraise and see you for that thing. And you really need to, and I do this, you know, when I do benefits, because I do the Thursdays and Sundays, which are all benefits, I pick and choose my material, because it's for a cause. It's not a regular night of people coming out. So some nights you got to pick and choose your battles.
All right, we'll leave it there. Joe, speaking of picking and choosing battles, will you be battling anyplace?
Actually, I will be doing a gig with this band called Fragile Sky. And it's going to be Saturday.
Sounds August. Like a liberal band.
Yeah, right. Saturday, August 13th. We're actually opening up for Mike Tramp. And this is going to be at Blackthorn 51 over in Elmont, New York. And I'll post that. I'm doing an audition with these guys, so I should be doing the gig. And I will post it if everything goes swimmingly.
Very well. I am going on tour next week. On Tuesday, August 2nd, I'll be in Pentwater, Michigan at the Village Pub. For tickets, call 231-869-4626. Wednesday, August 3rd, I'll be in Traverse City, Michigan at West Bay Beach Holiday Inn. For tickets, call 231-421-2134. Thursday, August 4th, I'll be in Spring Lake, Michigan at the Spring Lake Holiday Inn. For tickets, 616-846-1000. Friday and Saturday, I'm going to be in Merrillville, Indiana at Wisecrackers. For tickets, call 219-757-3589. As always, you can check out the full unedited interview with Detective Dave and the rest of the show. Go to davinsden.com. Like us on Facebook, Davin's Den. Thank you guys for hanging out. If you like us, tell a friend. If you hate us,
tell no one.
Either way, keep on listening.